Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren. On
106.5 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course, I'm Al Warren. Now, joining me today, co-host, we've got Mr. Michael Hawley. Here you go.
Hello, Al. How you doing, Al?
I'm doing wonderful, as usual. Always wonderful.
That's great.
Even when it's bad. Yeah. So here we go. We're doing a couple of more Jack the Ripper shows here, and old time. And I think I've heard of Jack the Ripper. He's
well. This particular one I'm looking forward to. When I first started in 2009, one of the people that really got me on the right track was this guy named Simon Wood. So I learned so much about it, and a lot of the stuff that I would research. I would talk to a mutual friend of ours, and Joe Cecchuti, and he'd go, well, you know, Simon found that already. I mean, you know how many times that happened. It was amazing. So I'm looking forward to this.
If he really stirred you in the right position there, he would have told you to quit.
That's right. That's true. It's true.
Anyway, so we got Mr. Simon D. Wood on the line. So how are you doing today, Simon?
Good. Thank you very much. Yes, good.
Fantastic. Okay, so now the book that you have out is called Deconstructing Jack, and it's the secret history of the Whitechapel murders. So before we get too detailed into what's going on, let's just lay this out for listeners, because some listeners might not have any clue of what the premise of the book is. So what's the basic premise of this book?
Well, when I started out, I didn't have a basic premise. I thought, well, you know, I'll just start at the beginning and work my way through it and see what happens. And as I worked my way through it, I suddenly came to realize that everything that we have been told about Jack the Ripper is a lie.
Wow.
And it's very hard to pluck the truth out of a big lie. So Then I went back into it and I started investigating everybody and finding out how they lied, when they lied. I don't think I'll ever find out why they lied, but that became the premise for the book.
How do you decide how you're going to do an investigation like this? Because if you're saying most of the people involved, most of the people that have already explained and said to the world, this is what Jack the Ripper did and this is who he was, etc. So where do you start from that? Do you just forget everything that's been said before and then start right at the very beginning and just not take into account anything?
No, absolutely. I started at the beginning. I ignored all the previous mentioned suspects. Sorry, Mike.
That's okay.
And I just worked my way through it. I didn't ignore the suspects, but I just looked at them as they came up in chronological order. And you kind of see where one story begets another, and so on and so forth. And then you get the loose cannons, like Donald McCormick and his Russian policeman sent over to discredit the Metropolitan Police, which just came out of the blue and was nonsense. And then, of course, the thing that started me off in 1976 was the Royal Conspiracy. And that was a doozy. Completely fake. 100% fake. But by golly, it sold some books.
Well, it's interesting, Simon, how you put this, because when I first started, the automatic assumption was there was a Jack the Ripper, and that legend was the truth. And so what you did was you went a step prior to that and said, hold on, let's look at this first.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And the question I have now that I've come around to is not who was Jack the Ripper, but what was Jack the Ripper?
Interesting.
Because I believe it was a sort of umbrella term for various other crimes which were best left alone.
And what's interesting about how you're saying this, even though if the readers are listening, one thing, if you have his book, it is filled with evidence and data. It's like, well, that's one of the things I remember about you. You always had something with your argument when you would start. You'd have something, a report or something with this. So that's one of the things I want to make sure everybody knows, that you have, it is like pockmarked full of data and research.
Yes, I've always tried to do that. And I don't conjure things out of the air and then try and find data to support it, because a lot of people work that way and it fails eventually. What I do is I find the piece of data first and think, whoa, that's interesting, and then take it from there.
And I watched that actually with one of the people I was trying to research a long time ago was back then the quack doctors, especially the French cures doctors with the sexual, kind of like they were experts in the sexual diseases out of Albany, New York. And so it was a whole group. And this is where then when I was finding stuff, I noticed that you'd already done it like 10 years before me. So then I was stealing your stuff then, okay? I'm just letting you know, Simon. Stealing it.
that's a bummer, isn't it? Yeah.
For me, looking at it from outside in and not being as involved as you guys, I look at this as you're sort of saying, just so people understand this, that it wasn't so much that there wasn't murders, there was killings going on in London. But what you're saying is a lot of people that have told us who or what Jack the Ripper was about has not been truthful up to now. So you're kind of trying to put that all right.
Yes, I'm not saying that the various authors who have gone before me have lied. I just think they've misinterpreted the what facts there are. The people I'm accusing of lying are people like Sir Robert Anderson and Melville McNaughton, and people of their ilk who have steered us wrong all these years. But we have to believe in their lies to come to the conclusions that we have.
When you say steered us wrong, So let's get into that some. So what do you think really happened here? Like what's going on? So are you in essence saying that the murders happened, but there was no just one killer?
No, not at all. I have very different views about the first, Polly Nichols, the first canonical victim. And I have totally different views about the second one.
Annie Chapman.
Annie Chapman. And I think there's a very good case to be made, although I can't prove it, but there's a very good case for the involvement of a Conservative Member of Parliament.
Has that been added in your book?
I put it into the second edition.
Okay.
Of my book. And I think it's big. I really do. I think there was a personal involvement there, which was embarrassing for him. And then, 2 weeks or 3 weeks after her murder, he was whooshed out of the country, in America, and telling people all about it.
Is he the same guy that was involved with possibly the Martha Tabram? I know one, what was that gentleman's name that had gone to America and was talking about the Martha Tabram one, where he tried to go undercover and then to find out who it was.
So many people have done that, Mike. They really have. And they keep finding different people. Different people for different reasons. Michael Kidney.
Right.
I'm not sure whether he had a hand in it or not, right. But there's some very suspicious business going on.
So you're thinking maybe something going on, combination of Scotland Yard having connections with the members of Parliament, something to that effect, possibly?
Oh, absolutely. Scotland Yard was amazingly powerful at the time. It was, if you think of... They were the equivalent of the uniform police, the detective police, special branch, I forget what they're called now, special department, they were the equivalent of the FBI. They were working around the country off the books,
right.
Solving this and that. And also, they were big in America.
Yeah, they had a lot of connections with the Pinkertons. I remember you were talking about that.
Oh, wow, yeah. The Pinkertons were really in there. And I spent a lot of time in the second edition of the book following these detectives around North America.
Like Jarvis?
Oh, yeah, so good old Jarvis, yes. And Andrews.
Oh, yes.
Who went to Canada. Mm-hmm. And Shaw.
Right, oh, yes.
Who
Superintendent
went
to, Shaw, did we find any more about that?
Oh, yes. He seems to have, and I've mentioned this already, but I'll expand on it a bit in the next edition. He turned up calling himself, well, I think it was him, because his Scotland Yard record matched the record of the person he was pretending to be. He called himself Inspector Soyle.
Oh, yes. S-O-Y-L-E.
That's right, yeah. And it's an old, funny choice of name, but it's an old verb meaning to solve, which I thought was pretty interesting. But he gave a long interview to one of the papers in, I think it was Philadelphia, and he knew so much about the circumstances surrounding the double event and the lengths the police had gone to. And he gave away more information than Swanson ever did.
Right. Now, Swanson was basically doing Anderson's bidding. He was underneath Assistant Commissioner Anderson. And then, it seems like they were hand in hand. And you had made a comment once about when one of the suspects, Kosminski, who was actually McNaughton, was the first person that brought his name up, even though Anderson championed him. But you never saw Anderson talk about any Polish Jew until McNaughton's memorandum.
Exactly. And I think the two of them got together. One said, I'll take the doctor, you take the Polish Jew, and we'll forget the third one. Because that was the guy, Ostrog, who in October of 1894, just 6 months after the memoranda, was given, it was discovered that he was in prison in Paris at the time of the Whitechapel murders, and he was given £10 for his trouble and false arrest. And also, McNaughton had been involved with him 3 years earlier in 1891.
With, Ostrog?
Ostrog, yeah, and sent him off to a mental institute. And that would have been an ideal time to suspect him of being the Ripper, but no such luck. So, you know, he plucked three people out of thin air. Said, right, one, two, and three.
Right.
These are our three babies.
Well, I have a question. I remember when you looked at Anderson's writings, he made a comment that early September, when they were going door to door, they were convinced. It was like when he was not even there. Anderson was not even there yet because he was on vacation. But he said that when he got back, he was convinced, they were convinced that it was a Polish Jew. So it was almost a preconceived idea. It's almost as if McNaughton knew that, so he gave him that name, and he knew that Anderson was going to take that.
Absolutely. Take the bite. Yeah. And I think that whole business of the police going door to door in a very limited area of Whitechapel, it was about a square mile, the whole thing, was a kind of unofficial census to see who was there and who wasn't there. So, you know, the Ripper has provided endless excuses for various odd behavior.
Well, one of the things that was intriguing to me is that here we have, now we talk about the canonical five and Polly Nichols being the first of the, you know, possible Jack the Ripper victims. But because of the previous two murders in Whitechapel, Emma Smith, like 6 months before, and then Martha Tabram, already people were talking about there was a serial kind of killer or a, you know, monomaniac around. And then lo and behold, there is one. And so it almost kind of like follows what you're trying to say is you could see this prefab thing being formed.
I think it was the murder of Polly Nichols that gave birth to the idea of the, for want of a better word, serial killer on the rounds, because immediately after she was murdered, the police were talking about the work of a gang.
After Polly Nichols?
After Polly Nichols, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also Emma Smith, right? Was it? There was the work of a gang?
No, Emma, well, yes, Emma Smith, she said she was attacked by a group of men. I got my doubts about this. I think she was attacked by a group of policemen.
Oh, boy. Well, interestingly, that it wasn't her that said it. It was that watchman guy that said that she said that.
That's right.
So,
And I think the thing that was used on her or in her, horrible, was a truncheon.
A what now? I'm sorry?
A truncheon. Perfect shape and size. I mean, I don't know, and I don't know whether we will ever know, but...
Yeah.
And also, you know, after it happened, you know, all the police said, oh, don't know anything about this. And Superintendent West, you know, put his best men on the case. Oh, can't find anything about this. You know, my men would know.
Yeah.
And it's all very shaky.
And then how about the Mary Kelly? That was a brutal one. And then indoors. How about any perspective on that particular?
Well, funnily enough, I was working on this earlier today. It's a very difficult one to get around because there's so many things to consider. But I don't believe anybody was murdered in this. And the photograph we have of the corpse in Miller's Corp, I don't think is a photograph of a female human being.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's, maybe like a male human being or so? It's pretty nasty. It's ripped apart.
Yeah, but you look at it closely. I'll have to send you some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You look at it closely, and it's why I asked you about the wax museum that was round the corner in Whitechapel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I get you. I see that it might be something like that kind of display, because we were talking about that Whitechapel's wax museum. They were trying to imitate Tussauds, and then who were experts at it, and you couldn't tell the difference between a human and one of those wax displays.
Exactly.
Hmm.
So I'm still working that one out at the moment. It's this new edition of my book will be illustrated.
Oh, illustrated. Oh, okay. So is this the third edition?
Third edition, yes.
Okay. Because I see, you made the comment about the third edition, because I thought I saw the cover. Oh, I know that you have the cover ready for that third edition.
That's right, yeah. I got that wonderful photograph from Jose Aranto, a Spanish photographer. And I saw this picture, and he just posted it up on Facebook for no apparent reason. I took one look at this and thought, there's my cover. And he was charming and helpful, and he just said, yeah. And then he sent me a high-resolution copy of it, and... I send him a copy of Volume 2, second edition, so we're all happy at the moment.
Gotcha. So then again, so we have the canonical five, which we always talk about that, like, many people consider, because they all have similarities in MO, like deep throat cut. How would you kind of put that into play? Are you saying, well, I guess you said Mary Kelly was likely possibly not part of it, and then Elizabeth Stride, that was not even part of it either, because that was probably a domestic. So then it would be only Polly Nichols, and then Annie Chapman, and Catherine Eddowes. And
Annie Chapman and Catherine Eddowes are the only two that kind of match each other.
Okay.
Extent of mutilations and similarity,
right,
of mutilations, you know, all the stuff over the shoulder and
right. I know, nasty.
It is nasty, and I don't mention any of this in my books. You know, people don't need that. They just need to know that they died.
Right. And so again, just a little clarification. So the possibility that now, would you say, let's say Scotland Yard possibly involved, maybe with the member of parliament, but how about the press? I mean, they were in for money, you could see that there was some big money being made.
Oh, they were certainly out to exploit it for all it was worth. But I don't think they were behind the exploitation. I mean, none of it would have happened. None of the press, much of the press coverage would never have happened had the coroner, Wynne Baxter, milked it for all it was worth.
He was a character.
Oh, and a crook. I don't know if I've mentioned it about his advertising agency.
At the time?
Yeah, he had one at the time. He was busy fleecing people.
And so he was an attorney?
No, or was he? Yes, he was. I beg your pardon. Yes, he was.
Okay. Well, yes. Which means I could see him wanting that. That would be perfect for him.
Yes. It's great. But, you know, the inquest into Polly Nichols and also Annie Chapman both stretched over 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, going by the rules running inquests at the time, both of them should have been over in a day.
Right.
But he introduced this cavalcade of witnesses.
So how about with now Inspector Aberline? He's kind of famous in the world of Jack Ripper, especially like the movie From Hell. He's kind of like the man in charge on the street. And then he was assigned to it after the Polly Nichols case. How would you put that in perspective with what was going on with that? Is that something going on in the background there?
Possibly. I can't say definitively, but I look upon Aberline as a sort of ringmaster, kind of enabling the whole thing.
Okay.
But again,
they brought him there. I mean, one of the, they say, is because he was there before, so he knew that area quite well. But then again, also, he knew everybody. So he would have been a perfect person to be an enabler.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not quite sure who sent him into Whitechapel, because just prior, or on the same day as Polly Nichols died, Monroe had resigned. Anderson hadn't taken over his office as yet. So I'm wondering who sent Aberline in.
So I think the first thought I would have would be Swanson.
I don't know.
You know, but then, I mean, he was a chief inspector. I mean, I know that, you know, he was kind of like supposedly the one that was supposed to be in charge, but I'm curious to see what was going on back then. You're right. It couldn't have been Anderson.
No. No. And also, well, the other reason he was sent in was because Reed and Arnold were both on leave.
Reed was on leave at that time. Okay.
Exactly.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They both, Polly Nichols got murdered on the Friday, and both their leaves started on the Sunday.
And then Arnold, so he was the one in charge, the local there, and he was a head inspector, Reed was,
yes,
of this Whitechapel.
He was your local CID man.
Okay.
And they both went off on holiday. So, or vacation, as you call it over here. But so they couldn't have thought, you know, that the murder of Polly Nichols was of any great importance.
Hmm.
Mind you, it hadn't happened within H Division. Her murder happened in J Division.
That's right.
Just over the border. So that was neat.
Right. And Inspector Helson, I think, was involved with that.
He was. And Spratling.
What's your take on the letters, the Jack the Ripper letters?
I don't think any of them were written by the murderer. And it's interesting about the Dear Boss letter and the Saucy Jackie postcard, which followed on the Monday. Because that's the thing that ties Eddowes and Stride together. The letter kind of takes the blame for the forthcoming murder of Eddowes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the postcard ties Stride with Eddowes and makes it a double event.
So in the letter, the author of that letter said double event this time, was that the Saucy Jack letter or was that the first letter, the Dear Boss?
That was the Saucy Jackie postcard.
Okay.
And then suddenly it was a double event.
And so that guy was, so they're wondering, I think it was Israel Schwartz. Was he the one that saw somebody with Elizabeth Stride?
That's right. And then he ran off home. Thinking he was being chased by somebody.
And then, so that might very well be who Inspector Anderson and Swanson thought was the person that identified the killer or something to that effect.
Well, I'm rather disposed towards thinking it was Joseph Lewend.
Okay.
Who came out of the Imperial Club on the morning of Eddowes' murder.
Right.
And saw these two people standing at the end of Church Row, Church Passage, whatever it was called, which led down to Mitre Square.
Okay.
And also, in 1891, they got hold of him again to try and identify Sadler as the person he'd seen.
Okay. And that was with the Francis Cole's murder?
That's correct, okay. Yes.
And then McNaughton said nobody saw anybody.
So. McNaughton said a lot of things.
Well, it's interesting because maybe with McNaughton's, there was possibly a member of Parliament involved with that as well. So,
well, trouble is the member of Parliament went off to America and he wandered about aimlessly over there for no good reason. Then came back to Britain. Then went to the Azores. And then resigned from Parliament. So he wasn't around for the double event or Mary Kelly. He had a perfect alibi for those two. The only one he didn't have the alibi for was Annie Chapman.
In the description of your book, it starts out with Jack the Ripper did not exist. So
yeah.
What is it that you want people to get out of the book? Like, what is that kind of the what you hope they take away from it? And what do you mean by did not exist?
Didn't exist as a person, as a personality, as a shadowy figure, was it around the East End? He was an invention, and a very clever one.
That became a legend.
Oh, absolutely. I doubt that anybody at the time thought that 140 years, whatever it is, later, we'd still be taking a deep interest in this. I think they got to about 80, 95 and said to themselves, I think everybody's forgotten about it by now.
So what do you think the point of that was for? Like, who? I'm trying to get to the root of who it was that created this legend, so to speak, and why they created it.
Definitely created by the police, because a newspaper reporter coming up with this idea is all well and good, but you needed the blessing of the police to get this put on posters outside 168 police stations. So the police had to believe it, as phony as it was.
So you're saying headquarters was the one, but the lower police probably believed what was going on?
The lower police believed what they were told to believe. There's a small section in my book where Warren is saying something to the effect of, I think this whole series of murders was done by a secret society.
Okay.
For political ends. I don't know how he came to this conclusion. And at the same time, the police in various police stations being lined up for their nightly duty were being read these letters, supposedly, from Jack the Ripper, and told to, look out for this chap.
At the same time.
Exactly the same time.
So I was just going to let everybody know that Warren was the commissioner of the...
He was the commissioner, yes. Not a very good one.
Yeah, well, it ended after the Kelly murder anyway, didn't it?
It did, yes, it did.
Do you think that did you make any connections with that politics that was going on between Warren and Monroe and that?
Well, I certainly think that Monroe was working his nuts off trying to get rid of Warren, and he eventually succeeded and took his place.
Okay.
But everybody stated that Warren hadn't resigned because of Kelly's murder. He'd resigned because of this article he'd written for some magazine or other. And he'd he ignored the rules and then was thus taken to task. And then decided to resign. But it's very interesting. You look at this, 10 weeks of the Whitechapel murders, and it starts off with Monroe resigning,
right,
going over to the Home Office and running the secret department, and then in December, taking over as the commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. There's got to be something in that.
Right. And then, so Warren would not have been part of that because he was on the outs with that. So that would have been the Matthews with Monroe, right?
That's right. Yeah, Matthews is well in with Monroe.
Okay.
In fact, they I think Matthews was there. But Matthews, Anderson, Monroe used to have meetings once a week at the Home Office. So, don't know what they were dreaming up.
Well, I heard it was like Sunday meetings, and I thought Littlechild was involved with those meetings, some of those meetings too.
Well, he may well have been.
It was curious that Anderson was kind of part of that special branch stuff beforehand.
Yes, he's part of the, not for long though. He was part of the anti-Fenian group of police. And then that all sort of died to death. And he just went over to the Home Office and was left with one contact, Le Caron.
Right, right.
Or Beach, as his proper name was.
And that got him into a little bit of hot water a little later.
Oh, boy, did it. Oh, boy. Yeah, when he suddenly blurted out in the newspapers, I don't know if anybody knew this at the time, but I wrote the letters in the Times. And so he was responsible for sparking off the whole of the Parnell Special Commission.
And then, I mean, it kind of shows there was stuff going on in the background that, of course, you don't know about. And so it kind of leads to what you're talking about. There's stuff going on, and that's what you're trying to find out, which is so difficult.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, with all of the discrepancies in the paper, do you think that some of the, they were feeding some of the papers with certain information or with the deception?
I think so. Yes. Yes. They probably were. I'd like to see the release of all the papers from that time, but that ain't going to happen. I spent 6 months in 2011 working with Trevor Marriott.
Okay.
And he was doing his darndest to get these papers out into the public domain. And I wrote a whole series of things for presentation to the tribunal, because they were arguing that if these papers were released, you know, if a sort of renegade Irishman got hold of them, he could trace informers through to them, to the modern day.
Huh.
And take his revenge on them. And I went to a great deal of trouble to point out that this would be impossible.
Right.
You know, because certain censuses don't exist anymore. They got destroyed by fire or water, and there was no census in 1941 because of Mr. Hitler. And then the 1951 census isn't going to be available till 2051. So we'll all be pushing up daisies by that time.
Right.
So, you know, there's no way it can work. And then in the middle of all this, did you read the Clutterbuck thesis?
No, what's that?
Ah, I'll send you a copy. This was a thesis that a guy called Clutterbuck, who was I think he was sort of special branch operative or MI5, something like that. I can't quite remember at the moment. But he wrote this long, long thesis, which for the purposes of which he was allowed access to a lot of stuff that we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. So, you know, this stuff is still around. but they don't want us to see it.
Right. When you were talking in your description, you talked about the additional facts, and I think it was for your second edition or your third edition. Your second, yeah. Was that more the like the member of parliament stuff that you were finding out lately, or is that some other stuff?
No, it's other stuff that I found out. I can't get any further with my member of parliament, but okay. You know what I have found out still stands.
Right.
I believe.
Yeah. Right.
What else have we had? We had the royal conspiracy. That was a good one, but a complete lie.
About the Maverick diary is another.
Oh.
There you go. Yeah.
There's a phony if there ever was one. And these people have given up arguing whether it's genuine or not. Huh. They're now arguing about who forged it. And it just seems to be, there's something like 8,000 posts on Casebook, and they're all desperately arguing with each other about this. It's such a waste of time. And then I think another very dodgy piece of evidence is the Swanson marginalia.
Okay, yeah.
I think that's desperately dodgy. All the lengths they went to convince everybody that the book he'd written the end paper notes in had been a gift from Robert Anderson, because Robert Anderson loved him so much.
Right.
Hmm. And it wasn't. And they really had to, you know, fake it up by pasting a letter from Robert Anderson in the front of it, and the date was all wrong.
Oh, Aberconway, is it that particular one? I think that's the granddaughter of Anderson.
Oh, she's the granddaughter of McNaughton.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that's right.
I don't think the Andersons had any kids.
Okay.
Yes, they did.
Oh, I'm thinking of Swanson. This was Swanson marginalia, so it was from Swanson.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the other thing I was interesting, you made a comment about the clocks at the time. I mean, people are now talking about certain suspects. Maybe I think the cross that they talk about, they're real specific, real precise with those clocks. And your point, I think, was that, well, that's not necessarily so accurate. So don't take that as gospel.
No, there was, I'm not sure if train time had come in yet. I must check that out. Because it was the railways who standardized time so that a clock in Scotland read the same as a clock in London.
Okay.
Because before that, they just said what they wanted to say. So you had no idea what time you were going to end up in Scotland.
Gotcha.
But, you know, all the local clocks, church clocks, brewery clocks, they just went off, you know, when they felt like it. It must have been a nightmare living in Whitechapel.
And I'm just interested because you'd made a comment that if it was supporting your theory, then it was completely accurate. But if it was contradictory to your theory, then it was the other way. So you're just, you know, it's kind of a point. It just depends on how you approach that.
Exactly. Yes.
Do you have any of the theories out there that people have come up with and have written about that you sort of like or think that which is your sort of favorite? How's that?
Well, I'm not being smarmy here, but I like Mike's. I really did. Who else have we had? Oh my God. Do you know there's something like 370 suspects?
That's amazing.
It's incredible. If you had a pulse in Victorian London, you were a suspect.
H.H. Holmes is now a suspect.
Oh, my God, yes. Silly.
You know, there's the, could Jack the Ripper have been a woman?
Might well have been. Who was it? Somebody put that forward. I think it was
Mary Percy was, I think, the girl, lady. Piercy,
that's right. Quite possible.
Have you enjoyed any of the movies or anybody's take on it?
I loved the one with Christopher Plummer and James Mason as Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. I can't remember what it was called.
Oh, and speaking of that, Arthur Conan Doyle nowadays is a suspect, too. There's a couple doctors on the East Coast that are promoting that. So, messing with Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah. Oh, what was it called? It'll come to me in a weak moment. But I thought that was fabulous. I didn't like the Michael Caine thing. Mm. I thought it was nonsense. And I didn't like the Johnny Depp thing. One, he was a drunk, and the other one, he was a drug addict.
Yeah, he was an addict.
Interesting man, though. No, for... I forget when it was, 1903, was it that he fingered George Chapman?
Yes.
Maybe being the Ripper. And then from that moment until 1929, he never uttered a word. Not a word about it. And he could have made a good living going around, you know, doing talks.
Right.
As the man most closely associated with Jack the Ripper. But he didn't. I wonder why.
I think Anderson did some talks.
Oh, Anderson talked about a whole lot of things. One of his favorite subjects was masturbation. And he told this story. About some young man who was on a train, and another passenger on the train showed him this pornographic book, and it just twisted the young man's mind, you know, beyond control, and I think he did away with himself or something like that. He certainly went loopy. And what was it called? He used to belong to these do-goody clubs. He never really talked about Jack the Ripper, except in one of the New York papers in 1910, where he got all the facts completely wrong.
That was a habit that happened.
Oh, yeah.
So at the end of the day, when someone picks up your book, takes it home and reads it, is there something you hope they take away from that book?
As I said earlier, I think if they can stop asking who was Jack the Ripper and start asking what was Jack the Ripper, I think that'll do them a lot of good.
Right.
Because you can't, you know, even with the best intentions, you know, Mike, you know, with Tumblety, you could never finger him for the murders, could you?
He's just got worlds of stuff. This guy has been everywhere. I think that's what's so interesting about him, because what happened in not just the Ripper thing, he's just this character. So he's so fun to research.
Oh, absolutely.
So
all the stuff about Abraham Lincoln and... who was the? Who was the Garfield? Was it?
And
he helped with that.
Yeah, a little bit with but it's like he was everywhere. So, but it's so fun, and that's kind of the latest research I've been doing. What was going on with him in America before and after the murders?
Yeah.
So, just a character.
Yeah. Tell me something. Do you believe that he was 6'2" and broad-shouldered? And
no, he wasn't. What I believe what he said he was, if you look in the his autobiographies, he says how tall he is. And here's a man that would definitely embellish it even more if he could. But he says exactly 6 foot tall. And that's from him. And it's like, well, I would tend, because he was a very deceptive individual, and then people said he was taller. What, you know, he was, it was kind of like bragging rights to show how tall he was. Well, then he could have easily said 6'2", but he didn't. He said 6 foot tall exactly.
Oh, really?
So, yep, 6 foot tall exactly. And then, remember the Russian Jew was 5'11". So it's like, you know, Ostrog was.
Yeah.
So like, that's one of the things they found. There's we found a lot of new things. Like he was a hermaphrodite. Who would think of that?
Who was? Tumblebee.
Tumblebee was a hermaphrodite.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh yeah. He had couple plays. One is the Undertaker talked about it. The other was his attorney in Baltimore. Tumblebee passed out and his pants fell down. And he heard it, rumor that he was a hermaphrodite, and so when he came to life, he asked him about that. And Tumblebee says, "Well, that's has plagued me all of my life, but that brings on a whole new light." He definitely identified as a male, but that Baltimore attorney under oath was talking about the male and female parts that Tumblebee had. So it was really weird.
He had girly bits.
But that. Yeah, well, he had female hip features, and then effeminate hands. His voice was effeminate, but then he had the mustache. Again, his mustache and hair were completely white, and the Undertaker popped one of his mustaches right off. It just popped right off. So it's like this guy has a lot. So there's some cool things coming about with Tom.
Oh, great! I look forward to it.
Simon, now do you have a website or a place that people can come find your book or find out more about you?
No, I don't. I don't have a website because I really wouldn't know what to put on it. But you can find me at Amazon Books, Deconstructing Jack. Go to Amazon, put in Deconstructing Jack. My biography is in there and various reviews. I think I've got 37 of them at the moment.
Fantastic. What we'll do is we'll put that up on our website as well so people can find it without having to figure it out, you know, make it easy. Well, the book we're talking about today has been Deconstructing Jack, and our guest has been the author, Simon Wood. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been great fun.
Nice speaking with you, Simon.
Oh, you too, Mike.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.